Welcome to the Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. My name is Lucy.
And I'm Spencer.
This is the podcast where we talk about all things child development and education related.
Each week we discuss a subject that drives our passions and we hope excites you as well.
So this week, we're re-tackling our haunted episode. We have been trying to record this several times and
a long time.
It's apparently cursed. But this is something I'm super passionate about. This is our episode on barefoot is best. So why is it important for children to be barefoot outside and inside, just in general?
You should definitely be barefoot inside. I have a lot of strong feelings on that subject.
Oh, yeah. I definitely think that you should. Definitely. Oh, well, I guess you are also Asian. So I guess, is that?
It's
that
a really. No, it's like a. Oh,
it's like a really strong cultural thing.
It's hugely cultural. And I thought Japan was strict. When we were in Thailand, businesses didn't like shoes on. Like you would,
really?
I went to the dentist and you would take your shoes off outside the dentist to go in.
I love that. Oh my gosh. I
Isn't
should tell
cool?
John we'll move to Thailand. Cause
do it. Cheap beaches, rock climbing.
That'd be great.
What if you invented a shoe with a magnetic release so that when you walked up to the door, the soles came off. So it was a seamless transition.
Oh.
Soul be
wait,
gone.
Wait, so then you'd be walking around in just little like shoe hats?
Yeah.
Like foot hats?
Like, you can figure out this design element, Lucy. I'm not giving you any designs. I'm just giving you ideas. You should think about it.
I'm just picturing someone like, okay. Well, I'm very tired. This caffeine is kicking in.
You have caffeine?
Yeah, I
Who
know.
Are you?
I know. Well, I was like, this is not going to work if I do not have some caffeine.
It's okay. I feel you. I think we both had nights, if not the same time or opposites, where one of us is like, it's been a week because, yeah. You know, we're hardworking women and life can kick butts.
Yeah. Yeah. Good women boss getting things done, but yeah.
What's the boss girls? Girl boss.
Girl boss, yeah.
But speaking of girl bosses, though, I feel like this is such a good example. You are in the situation of a girl boss because you developed this specific
I don't like this
subject.
Segue.
No, I have to up you. You developed the segue when you were working on your conference topic. And that is literally like a go get him like mom super like superwoman
to not get paid awesome. To go and speak at conferences to for free okay. Put in a bunch of work and
but listeners who have been in a conference raise your hand like maybe one person raises their hand like no like you're super cool
oh,
you're
well, thank you well this is something I am a topic I'm really passionate about and it's yeah I think it's a really fun topic. It's fun to talk about. It's a little bit different. It is something that I know I've mentioned on the podcast before that this is a subject that I am super passionate about, but I did not start out that way. This, I guess I'll share a little bit of my origin story for this. So my husband, John, he's always been really into like, you know, healthy feet. He's really concerned about healthy feet.
Makes sense.
He has a lot of opinions on this. He had a lot, especially when I was pregnant, when we were talking about how we were going to raise our child. And he started bringing up topics that I was like, I didn't even know that this was a thing. Like, are we going to let our child wear shoes? Yeah, probably. Like, how do we feel about rain boots? Like, it was very interesting to have come up, but I mean, being in this profession, I have a lot of really weird, really strong opinions, and he does not have very many. And the fact that he was so passionate about this, and I did not have an opinion on this, I was like, sure, like, let's go for it. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I started doing my own research and thought that the research was very interesting. But then what really made me a believer in this is watching the development of children with whom I was working, working with infants and toddlers, and seeing that there was a huge difference in mobility between the children who wore shoes and who did not. We'll kind of talk about that as we go along. Sorry, listeners, you don't get to see my slideshow.
It's very pretty. She looks lovely in her lovely Olivia, Olivia Pear photography.
Yeah. The Olive Pear photography, I think.
Olive Pear. Olive Pear.
We'll have to tag her, even though my pictures are not going to be in, you know, nobody can see it.
No, but I love this picture. Oh, so this is fun hearing this again, by the way, because the last time I have heard the subject matter, it was a year ago. I know,
you have to hear it again. So sorry. Yep.
Well, it's almost like fresh to me all over again, because it was a long time ago.
It was. So hopefully I do better this time than I did last time. Maybe that's why we had to record it again. But yeah, I'll just kind of ask some of these questions. So I will ask you, Spencer, and listeners, you can, we'll put them in our stories. Some of the questions that I have in here. So what is your comfort level with being barefoot? Scale 1 to 5.
I would say a solid 5, as in I'm very comfortable with being barefoot. I'm actually very weird about that. I'm very go with the flow. And so I love high heels. I love nice shoes, but I'm one of those girls that if my feet hurt, I'm going to walk barefoot on the sidewalk. I'm going to walk barefoot outside.
I feel like I saw you walking barefoot at Compass a lot.
All the time.
In school, Spencer was all the time not wearing shoes.
Was it the healthiest thing? I don't know. Do I think it weirds people out sometimes? Probably.
Well, I mean, we'll get into that a little bit too. I think the hard thing for me in a school setting was like, if I take off my shoes, the children will take off their shoes. Right. And in certain schools, that is a rule. We'll talk about that in a second.
I just remembered this talking about this last year. Yeah. This is coming back to me.
And it's so hard for me. Like, I guess it's not. I literally get to with my job now, I get to tell children to take off their shoes.
You have a very shoeless specific job.
Yes. And it is fantastic. And I'm the yoga teacher. So I get to walk around the schools I am in without my shoes on and nobody questions it. And it's lovely. But I hated being a preschool teacher and having to force the children to put their shoes back on because it was a cultural rule in my the school that I was in.
Well, speaking of what we discussed earlier, is if we were in a Japanese preschool or a Thai preschool, this would not be the case. It would be very normal.
Right.
Totally agree that it's cultural.
Yes. Super cultural. And like, even just like the school culture, each school has a different culture. Again, we'll get into that a little bit more. I have a lot of opinions. Okay. So let's start out by talking about the benefits, because otherwise, if you don't believe that this is beneficial, then none of the rest of our discussion is really even important. So this is a quote. This is by Casey Flagel. She is a chiropractor that specializes specifically in children. And
oh, that's cool. One of the simplest ways to motivate proprioceptive and vestibular development is to let our babies be barefoot as much as possible. As the little pads of babies' feet feel, move, and balance on the surface that they are exploring, the information sent to the brain from tactile, proprioceptive, and vestibular pathways quiet or inhibit other extraneous sensory input. This creates focus and awareness of walking and moving through space. Babies get more tuned in to their surroundings. Makes sense.
You should be the voice of someone like the Metro lady, like, moving
until my wispy wisp gets into it, until I'm like, and go to the wet vine.
Well, that would add some character. It'd be more fun. Anyways, I love, love, love this quote. I think that it's just
lovely.
Exactly what we're talking about. She talks about, and we've talked about this before, proprioception, vestibular development, we talk about this a lot in a lot of our other episodes. So I love this idea. So proprioception is body awareness, right? She breaks down all of these different categories of body awareness. So we have proprioception, amazing, which is really understanding how our different body parts relate to other parts of our body, how our body fits together, right? And we develop this. We have sensors in our joints and in our muscles, and they send signals. And as we are getting feedback, that's how we build that proprioception. Then you have the kinesthetic awareness. This is essentially muscle memory. Vestibular awareness is your orientation in space. This is responsible for your balance. This all really focuses around your head. That's why all your vestibular organs, that's probably not the right word for it, but all of that system.
No, I understand.
Your ears, that's all built in your ears. And it's all in your head because that is so we can protect our brain. We need to know where our head is so that we can protect our brain. So you have all of these things: proprioception, kinesthetic awareness, vestibular awareness. All of this contributes to, like, this is how we understand ourselves moving through the world. It's really a really important awareness to have.
Right.
But when you're a baby, why are they always putting things in their mouth? They're learning about their world and they're getting feedback from their world. And, you know, there's lots of ways that we get feedback. We have physical feedback. We have auditory feedback. We have all of these, you know, all of these things to understand where we are. But as we get older, actually not even as we get older, as we get to not be an infant,
right,
we reduce our physical connection, our physical feedback from the world quite a bit. Really, the only way that we are interacting with the world is through the bottoms of our feet. And when you cut that off, that can be a problem. One of the things that made me start kind of looking into this a little bit more is, this is a comment I would hear this a lot, but one time in particular, I remember this conversation with infant teachers. There was a little girl who had just she was just about to move up to the older class. And generally, lots of infant classes tend to be more accepting of children not wearing shoes.
Right.
But older classes, the culture tends to be that they have to wear shoes once they get into like a toddler
classroom. It's a safety.
Yeah, it's a safety thing.
Quotation mark, safety.
Definitely, quote unquote, safety thing. So a girl who never, ever wore shoes, she had big, giant, bulky shoes on that she was getting used to move up to the next class. And she was doing that walk that I think you can, everyone can picture this anyways, because it's like the walk that a cat does when you put like socks on their feet or like tape on their feet, where they do that super high knee and they're like, what's going on? And one of the teachers was like, oh, that's normal. And they always do that. Well, and yes, that is a normal response. But why is that a normal response? It's because the physical feedback is being confused. The feedback that the bottoms of their feet are getting is that they're not actually picking up their feet, because the floor is still touching their foot. And that's why they have the exaggerated movements. It's to get their foot farther away from the floor. Their brain is telling them that they did not pick up their foot.
Crazy.
Obviously, we get used to that and that's fine and we can deal with that. But that is really confusing when you're developing this initial body awareness, you know?
Right. It's counterintuitive that if something is being developed, to halt the development, because that's literally the opposite of development.
Yep. So children who are habitually unshod have less injuries related to lack of balance, less frequent injuries in the feet and ankle.
Unshod. So, I love that.
Yeah, I love that word. Huh. So going back, Spencer was the first one to say, quote unquote, safety. Let's go and let's always talk what about I heard. The safety. Yeah. So just there, right there. Sorry, I'm going to get really passionate in talking about this.
No, you're fine. So, because also, sorry if it's hard to listeners. To listeners listening, I remember that we discussed this last year and I was uninformed on the subject. I was adamant for the safety. I was like, oh, no, it makes sense when you think about it. And I am, I'm definitely on your side of this now.
Yeah. Well, like, again, so like, I have a lot of research that we'll link in the end, you know, in our show notes. Right. I'm not going to talk about a ton of the studies. I do go into some studies a little bit, but yeah, but a lot of research does show that the children who are used to not wearing shoes have less injuries related to lack of balance.
Makes sense. They're less very injuries aware.
In their feet and their ankles. Yeah. Like, and I've seen that in cases of children who, you know, I've been able to in like outdoor preschools, in nature preschools, have children be barefoot if they're comfortable. And we'll go into in a second, we'll go into some rules that like some guidelines to use. But the children who are used to that, they know how to do that. Also, it slows you down. It forces you to walk slower. So it forces you to listen to your body a lot more. You're a lot more connected and literally grounded.
You're more conscious of what you're doing. It makes sense.
Yeah. It's a really awesome mindfulness exercise. That's John. We haven't done one in a while. We probably should. That's probably why we're all so grumpy. But John used to like, not, I guess it's not, obviously I'm on board with this, but it's like, it's uncomfortable to do some of these things sometimes. So like he would really stress for us to go on barefoot walks, and we'd be like the weird family who'd walk around our neighborhood. We wouldn't do it so much in the neighborhood that we are in now because we're in such a city, lots of broken glass, things like that.
Right.
But often we'll go to parks and try to do it. But we used to, when we were in more of a suburban area, we'd be the family who'd walk around without any shoes. And it's like an amazing mindfulness exercise, which we'll talk about in a second.
I bet. No, it makes sense. I was thinking about how when I was a kid, I used to, as an adult, I still have a fear of stepping on bees. I used to step on bees and get stung on the soles of my feet when I was a child.
I have done that as well.
I haven't done that once as an adult because I think I'm being more mindful of where I walk and, you know, what I do. Mm-hmm. Can it still happen? Yes, but it hasn't happened to me since. And I think that's a big part of the mindfulness.
Right. And that's good to be aware of, you know, that's a huge thing that we try to encourage in a setting where we're trying to actually connect children to nature is this understanding of coexistence of like, yes, you can put shoes on a child or an adult and they're not going to get stung on the bottom of their foot if they step on a bee. You also could cultivate an awareness for other living things and encourage people to not just bulldoze through and, you know, just be more conscious and not kill living things.
Right.
You know?
Just standard little practices.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I am quickly going to talk about these studies. Not wearing shoes promotes proper gait and foot structure. Also, this presentation focuses on both inside and outside, but there's not a lot of research on both.
Okay.
There's some research that collides, but it's kind of like just in general, not wearing shoes. Like it's definitely a Venn diagram. It's important not to wear shoes. It's important to be outside.
Makes things. Sense.
So this is trying to focus on the overlap, but some of them are just in general. So this is just in general, shoe wearing versus not shoe wearing. Does that make sense at all? I don't know.
No. It kind of does because more people are concerned about the outside shoe wearing than they are the inside. Yeah. So generally, so that's not true, but generally speaking, if we're trying to subsidize this in an easier manner. So.
Yeah. Well, I also think this does come up more like generally, if you have a stay-at-home mom who's primarily taking care of your children, I think most of those parents are probably going to have their children barefoot most of the time, like in their own house. Like that just kind of happens naturally a lot. Definitely they're going to put on shoes when they go outside a lot of the time. But but I think where this is almost more important and where this presentation focuses on a little bit more is in a daycare setting, because that is where they're every day inside. They most likely are going to wear shoes for two main reasons. One is the culture of the school.
Right.
But also parents want their children to look really cute when they go to a daycare setting. So they're often dressed to the nines that they wouldn't necessarily be every day at home.
Me and my future child.
Yes. Which dress your child to the nines. There's no problem with that. And I know you're going to let your child get messy, but they can paint their toenails and let that be how they match their cute outfit to their feet. Anyways, I'm really rambling.
I can't put them in. No. You're doing great because it's many topics. You're addressing many points because you're telling me that I can't put my child in little child high heels. And, you know, I'm disappointed that you feel that way, but I'll be okay.
Maybe this is a good spot to say that. We'll get to a quote in a second I love this quote, but it almost sounds like I'm talking about shoes as being evil and heels as evil. And that's not what I'm trying to say at all. I hope no one gets the right idea about that. Freudian slip. I hope no one gets the wrong idea about this. But what I am advocating for in this presentation is to think of shoes as more as a tool, as we would anything else. Like, they're important. Like, that's a lot of our discussions. We came up like rain boots. Rain boots are horrible for like.
I was going to say, are you going to get into that later or can you explain the rain boot?
Oh, well, yeah, let's just talk about this now.
Okay.
So just rain boots tend to have super, super thick soles.
Right.
They don't have any flexibility at all. So your foot is not able to move naturally at all. They generally have a built-in arch support that is not the shape of your foot. Yeah. And that messes with it a lot. They often have weird toe boxes. They're not the shape of a foot often. I mean, most shoes are not the shape of a foot unless you get like a specialty shoe that I've had a couple people remark. I wear shoes that look almost like clown shoes because mine are.
I know which ones you're talking about.
Yeah, they mimic the shape of a foot and it looks weird because we are used to shoes that do not. But yeah, like rain boots are one of those where it's like, it doesn't have the spot for the big toe. Its farthest out point is right in the middle. It has that curve on the edge. So yeah, it's just like, built for a human foot. So you should not wear rain boots all day, every day. That would be a really bad idea.
Also, if you are, you've got some smelly feet.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to say too. I was like, speaking of hygiene, like you probably aren't even going to have good hygiene with that too. So like, that's not a good idea.
Oh my gosh. Remember the days when you would come in from working outside on the mud days and you, oh my gosh, it didn't even smell to me, but I could tell that you were like, nope.
And they Lucy were like wear just these massive, sweated through, like just my socks would be sopping wet,
this.
But not from like the, not from water getting in, but just because they'd be sopping wet from wearing boots. And it was
rain
like, what is even the
and
point?
Summer, pure hell. I mean,
yep.
But shout out to any of my girlies listening who went through the hunter boots phase. Did you ever go through that phase, Lucy? Oh my gosh.
My husband is an affiliate for Zero Shoes. Like, I guess it kind of is like a sponsored ad. So there you go. But they actually have a minimalist rain boot that, but they're sold out. Otherwise I would have a pair by now.
Wow.
I was so
excited
about it.
This is a lot about how effective.
Yeah.
Wow.
But anyways, so that is, should you not buy rain boots? No, buy rain, like,
right.
Keep your feet dry.
It's like, don't wear a raincoat every day. What are you, what are you doing?
Right.
Like,
it's a tool. It's a tool to use. So in the right circumstance, it's really important. In the, like, you should wear shoes in a lot of circumstances. Your go-to should not be being barefoot, which I'll talk about later on.
Wait, please don't go to a public restaurant without shoes on. Like,
I think I did tell you this last time. Being so into this now makes me feel a little bit like a hypocrite because there was this guy that I casually was dating that he was really into me, but I couldn't date him because he never wore shoes anywhere, like in public places. And it really weirded me out. Yeah,
that's a little.
And I think now little. I'd be way more tolerant of that. Anyways, rain boots, great tool. Don't wear them all the time. Everything. But shoes should, cool. are tools. Yeah.
Just like we've always discussed in every episode, everything in moderation. So.
Right. It's just a balance. We just wear balance. Shoes too much. Okay.
Yeah.
So authors, back to the arch study. In 1992, there was a study that found shoe wearing in early childhood to be detrimental to the development of a normal arch. Authors found positive relationship between wearing shoes in early childhood and flat-footedness later on. Then there was a 2011 study on gait that found shoes to alter children's gait patterns. They decreased the movement of the intrinsic muscles of the foot, possibly contributing to the weakness in their muscles. Yeah, it's kind of if you use it or lose it kind of a thing. So my analogy that I love to use in this case with shoes being a tool is, did you ever watch Parks and Rec?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. In the earlier seasons when Chris Pratt is Andy and he breaks both of his legs and he's in two full leg casts. And then there's this whole episode where he's supposed to get his cast off, but he loves being waited on by his girlfriend. And so he chooses to keep them on for like 2 or 3 extra weeks or something like that. I don't remember. Maybe it's even like a month.
I would go crazy.
I know. So crazy. But he chooses to keep them on longer and they take him off and he like falls on the floor. His muscles have atrophied. And she's like, oh, but that's, you know, probably normal. And the doctor was like, no, if he had taken them off when I told him to take them off, then they would have been fine. And it causes a whole bunch of drama. But like the whole point is like a cast, undisputably a useful tool.
Right.
If you're wearing a cast when you shouldn't be wearing a cast, that is a problem. That's going to hurt your body and not help your body. So that's the analogy I like to think of with shoes. If you're using them,
I like that.
When you need them, when you're supposed to be wearing them to help you, it's good. If overuse is going to be a problem. So I'm going to read read this quote because you have your little Latin voice.
Podiatrist, Dr. William A. Rossi. I love the word podiatrist. I think it's the best word in the English language. It took 4 million years to develop our unique human foot and our consequent distinctive form of gait. In only a few thousand years, and with one carelessly designed instrument, our shoes, we have warped the pure anatomical form of human gait, obstructing its engineering efficiency, afflicting it with strains and stresses and denying it its natural grace of form and ease of movement, head to foot.
This is always where I give the disclaimer after this quote. I love this quote though. I just think it's so beautiful and so passionate. But yeah, it is. Also sounds a little bit like we should burn all shoes and I'm not trying to say that, but.
Okay, you know what? Actually, I can put a little bit of expertise working in my current job. Mm-hmm. Okay, small fun disclaimer. I'm actually really excited to say this because I go on this tangent all the time. Whenever somebody comes in for alterations, I tell them we will not take you for your alteration until you have the shoes that you are wearing with your wedding dress or outfit. And a lot of people go, okay, I'm going to come and I'm going to wear something with the same height, the same heel height, or I'm going to wear a pair of flats because I think I'm going to wear flats. No, it's not just about the height of the shoe. The way that we wear our shoes affects the way that we stand, the way that you're putting your bust out, the way you're holding your shoulders back. So if you are getting any part of your dress measured, any work done on the top of you, anywhere, it will be affected by the shoes you're wearing. Because that's how much shoes affect us. We're telling people this with no scientific background because we just know for a fact that's how much it affects it. Imagine what your shoes do to you overall on an everyday basis, not just with an outfit.
That was wonderful.
My TED Talk.
There you go. That was good.
Thank you.
Also, cheers to Spencer again for the beautiful segue, because we're going to talk about muscle development and gross motor skills. And we'll go through this pretty quickly because essentially a lot of this is what Spencer just said, that it starts at the feet, but it goes all the way through your body. It's not just right. affecting your feet. If you have a proper gait, it's going to, I guess if you have an improper gait, the way that you're walking, it can lead to problems in your knees, in your hips, and your pelvis. Right. Having strong feet and leg muscles can support the back to reduce reduce back pain in both children and older adults. So the way that, and I am not a doctor. I think that's very clear. But just, I'm not a doctor. I'm not a podiatrist. I'm not even a physical therapist. John, we had one of our cursed episodes that didn't work. We had John come and talk, and the sound quality just was crazy. But it was amazing because he actually really knows what he's talking about. I am not like that. But from my understanding, the way that your bones develop, your bones and muscles develop, are a result of the loads placed on the body. So the shape right. and the density of the bones, how strong your bones are. And if you are binding your feet, putting them in a little box, especially important for children, right? Shoes can hinder that proper development.
Right. Well, and that was the whole, I used to be a big fan of classical Chinese literature. If anybody here has read The Good Earth, that is an amazing piece. I believe it's a Pulitzer Prize winner. Quick synopsis. I haven't read it in a while. It's about a Chinese farmer in, I think, the 17th century, and describes his journey from marrying a commoner woman, they're both peasants, to becoming a lord of a fiefdom over the course of the book. It sounds very straightforward, but it is one of the most fascinating cultural intakes on just how we as a society exist mm-hmm. by the way that we treat people around us. By the end of the book, he has concubines and he has 20 children who don't have any value towards the world around them. Even though he was raised in poverty and lost children to poverty, they mm-hmm. don't understand that but one of the big points of the book is that it gets into foot binding, and the fact that the purpose was to showcase the fact of how wealthy you were. If you were wealthy, you didn't have to work. You didn't have to walk or function or worry about standing up. And so what a great way to showcase that, because if you didn't have to focus on the pain you'd be constantly in, then you have the blessing to be able to have your foot bound because you don't have to worry about that. And that's the point, is it's supposed to physically limit every part of your movement to the point where you could not even stand for long periods. So it affects the whole body.
Mm-hmm. And we think we're not doing that. And I don't think foot binding, maybe there are parts of different countries that do practice, but I don't think it's super common practice anymore.
I believe it's illegal to do upon somebody, is from what I understand. I mean, obviously you could do what you want to yourself, but I do not believe it's practiced anymore. But I do think that I have lower back pain. I don't know if it's from painting, but I think a lot of it comes from wearing the heels that I wear all the time.
Yeah. Well, and I'm not trying to scare you out of it or anything.
Oh, no. I think it's affecting my health.
You know, you see people with bunions and, you see overlapping toes. That these are really they're problematic, and that affects a lot of adults. So you're not the only one, but like it's
right, right.
A foot binding, I feel like that's a strong word to use, but that is a little bit like when we're forcing our feet into toe boxes that are triangles that's not what our foot is. And you see feet shifting in that shape.
And I know you're going to get into it, but Evan and I were doing some research, I think around Christmas of last year, because we wanted to invest in a pair of sneakers that would very properly focus on improving our foot health. We like walks in the evenings. And, I'd love, if you're not talking about it specifically in this episode, if you could maybe compile a small list to release to our listeners and viewers to help really good shoe recommendations for outdoor athletic use. Because I would love to invest in a good pair of sneakers that have active health ramifications.
Yeah. Okay. I'm not actually going into shoe.
That's a lot
shoes right now. So, but yeah, so I can do that really quickly. So, for adults, I already mentioned zero shoes. We love zero shoes. Zero shoes are affordable barefoot minimalist shoes. Like, they're still relatively expensive, but they're on the more affordable side. Which means
not bad, $90.
Yeah, which means like the quality is on it, reflects the affordability. I think they sometimes fall apart, but the customer service is awesome. Like the company, cool. Like, I mean, we are, I guess, as affiliates, I probably shouldn't say that, but to be totally transparent, like the quality, I like to buy separate shoelaces for them. The shoelaces break a lot. I love the sandals. 100% love the sandals. I have.
I'm just looking at some. They look very fashionable.
Yeah, they're real. I think a lot of them are relatively. They're like, they tend to be on the sporty side of things, but they actually in the past couple of years, like how they just came out with rain boots, they're coming out with more types of shoes that, yeah, can be. Like are a little bit more versatile. John bought a pair of dress shoes that are really quite pretty. They are just a little too small for him. So we're going to give them to my brother.
What a bummer.
But that is the thing with my feet have grown since wearing minimalist shoes because my toe splay, I have a better, and I've always had a good toe splay. There's also Merrell's. There are Vivo Barefoot, I believe. This is John's. John has already gone to bed, but this is his area of expertise here. He just tells me what shoes to buy and then we buy them. But yeah, I think those are kind of the big companies. All of them are really good. Vivo Barefoot, I think, is the one that John would, if we had money, if we weren't poor, we would probably do a lot. But again, we love zero shoes. We're always happy. I bought one pair of them that I did not love, but they've kind of updated that model. I have Toronto's for my like tennis shoes ones, and they kind of look like, they look a little bit like Converse. I think they're really cute. They are the ones that somebody said they look like clown shoes. So, but it's just a different way of looking at it. You know, I would say like, unless you are barefoot a lot, it will be kind of a process to get
into to acclimate and whatnot.
Yeah. Yeah. Like it takes a little while, but you get to the point where like normal shoes at the end of the day, it feels really good to take off your shoes.
Yeah, it does.
With barefoot shoes, my feet don't tire out the same kind of way. Like on or off, my feet feel about the same. Unless it's like I went on a big long hike, then I'm going to feel a little bit like, you know, like the 7-hour hike I went on, my feet were really sore and tired at the end of the day.
Yeah.
Like an average day, I could do a full day of work and my feet aren't going to be tired if I'm wearing barefoot.
No, shoes. I feel you.
Children's shoes, there's not a lot of wonderful options for children's shoes. I would say in general, you want to just anytime they can have shoes off, but look for a wider toe box and a wider shoe in general. You don't want a skinny shoe. Look for thinner soles and definitely try to find it. This is why rain boots, one of the reasons rain boots are so bad too, is that you have a big heel drop. You know, there's like an actual heel on most shoes, especially the for rain kids boot shoes.
Ache. Yeah, I can think of that ache after.
Yeah. And if you're going to have one that is not really like, doesn't have like straps or something, so it is able to fit on the right way, you do want some sort of arch support so it's not just like sliding around and causing blisters and problems. But yeah, 10 little. Oh, it is the best kind that we've found. 10 little is good. Zero shoes does not have, because 10 little is affordable. That's also, I'm poor. So that definitely reduces a lot of my options. But zero shoes, they have a sandal kit that you can buy. Like it's a you buy the sole of it and it's like a square and you cut it out to fit your foot. And then you punch holes and like put the straps in and stuff like that. We do that for Leo because that's pretty cheap. And like we've done that for his sandals. We've also just tried to look for things that are as good as you can get. And sometimes that's just what you can do. I know there are, so I think Vivo Barefoot does actually have a children's line. I'm not positive about that, but you can search children. Like if you have more money, that's not a problem. You can search like children, barefoot, minimalist kind of a thing. And there are some options, especially more kid size shoes. There are a lot more options for infants, toddlers. There's for Leo for the first like almost solidly 2 years of his life, we did like moccasins. And luckily they're kind of in right now. So they're pretty easy to find for pretty cheap. There's a lady, I don't remember her name. I can try to link her. If I remember, I'll link her in the show notes. There's a lady on Etsy who she makes leather shoes.
I remember you talking about her last time. Yeah.
They are amazing. You also get the benefits we'll talk about in a second of actual grounding. You can, with real leather, you can have actual real life earthing benefits from it. So those are great if you can get a real leather shoe, like for your infant or toddler. Yeah. Those are my best. Let's move on.
I appreciate it. That was very informative. And personally speaking, I have done my research on these now and I know what I want to buy. Thank you for that information because it helps me as an informed investor and informed consumer, like to know what I would like to wear.
And you don't have to take my word for it. Like you can research it yourself. There's lots of people who are, well, again, this is not entirely my thing. Like John kind of tells me what to buy and what to do. And that's what we do. I don't care quite as much as he does. So do your own research. If you're interested in there, there's more and more options are coming out all of the time because people are realizing that this is a real thing. This is an important thing. So yeah, go and look. So back to like gross motor and muscle development, barefoot walking outside encourages like specifically outside. That's why I liked, this is where I merged the two a little bit. It encourages a lot more variation of movement. You have to adapt a lot more.
Right.
You have lateral and vertical movement, which builds the muscles in your legs and in your feet and in your torso. This wasn't barefoot at all, but one thing that I did with an older group of children, you might remember this, Spencer, is that
this was when I was doing nature. I was a nature teacher and I'd be in a field. And the way that this field, like where the placement was, it was right above this creek bed, but right at the bottom of this hill. Like it was just a catch-all for all of this trash all of the time. So we had done a quick little cleanup on the field and I was so proud. A child looked outside around the area, the forest area outside of our fenced off field. Like the area we were in was, it was a natural play space. It was not a wild play space. Like it was still really curated, you know, but a child looked out into the forest area and was like, there's a lot of trash in there. We need to go in there too. And the children all like voted that we needed to go and clean the forest. So we got permission.
I remember this so well.
Yeah, it was also, and again, this is a little bit older children. We were like after school, like school age children, you know, and we're not talking to infants and toddlers, but we got parent permission, got parent volunteers. We talked about proper clothing and we went into the woods and cleaned the actual woods area. And it was so fascinating.
Ugh.
So fascinating. Because this was probably a group of like 10, 11 kids. And maybe two of them were comfortable in the space. And they were definitely children who obviously had played in that kind of a space before. Everyone else was very uncomfortable. And I had to actually save quite a few children because they were quite literally stuck in an area, they did not know how to get themselves out of different areas because they had never had to coordinate multiple planes of movement at the same time. They did not have to duck while stepping over something. This was not something like any kind of movement they would have done would have been in a curated like obstacle course maybe, but not this, that natural, more chaotic patterning of nature they had not experienced before. So it's just a really different, unique kind of movement. And when you, and in that space that we were in, I wouldn't have had them be barefoot. But when you merge the two, it brings even more of a cultivated space. It brings more of that movement into that space. Next, I love this one, is healthy emotional regulation and mindfulness. This is big in the world in general. We've really brought it into early childhood recently, understanding the benefits of mindfulness for children. And being barefoot really is a physical tether to the moment. It really promotes
mindfulness. Ooh, I like that.
By stimulating the foot and promoting awareness and attention. I compiled this list of benefits of mindfulness in children. This isn't specifically barefootness. It's just about mindfulness in general, but barefoot always makes a mindful moment. But Spencer, you want to read that list?
Sure. Be more ready to learn and engage. Listen to others. Stay calm, even when stressed. Focus and ignore distractions. Be patient. Be more tolerant of other people. Feel more happiness and gratitude. As someone who has an issue with mindfulness, these are great tips. I like to practice these, especially. I feel like the best time to ever try these out as an adult when driving. I heard someone once said the best peace of mind is to be patient in traffic.
Yes. Well, and like that's what it does is when you're it's good to practice mindfulness in situations where you do feel like you have more control. And then in different like we do that with children with yoga all of the time. We're setting up a calmer, peaceful environment generally. We'll try to. And we're helping them regulate their, episode that we had Simone Carvalho on, where she talks about yoga, teaching yoga to children. It is, she brought up, you have them calm down their heart when they're in excited, because that is going to bring up, it's similar feelings and emotions to anger. Your body reacts in a similar way. And so you calm yourself down from a happy state. That helps you in a situation where you are worked up in more of a negative kind of a context. And so mindfulness practice, it really does help in this, you know, it helps you be able to focus and ignore distractions more, stay calm when you're stressed more, especially with these, you know, children who are less sensory tolerant. It sounded like I had more to that sentence, but that was the end of the sentence.
No, I thought that was going to be a little worse. So yeah, I was like, oh, okay. No, agreed. It's an important thing. This, I don't know. It cannot be said enough. I think we've mentioned mindfulness many times in our episodes. It's the getting children to connect better with the material that you are producing as well, because you're encouraging them to slow down and better absorb it.
Mm-hmm.
So same with their feet and the way that they process the world around them.
Yes. Okay, this one is important to include, I think, when you're talking about being barefoot outside, because it is exactly the merging of these two things, two topics. This is grounding or earthing. So grounding or earthing is contact with the earth's surface electrons through being barefoot outside. So it's where your body transfers energy, necessary electrons from the ground into the body. It kind of neutralizes you. You have to talk about this whenever you talk about the subject. I feel like this is a little bit more controversial. It's not quite as proven of a science. If you're interested in the subject, there, I believe there's a book called Earthing and a documentary, The Earthing Movie. Yeah, they're very, very interesting. Yeah, I'd look into that if you're interested in this. It has real, actual scientific evidence. It also has a lot of anecdotal evidence, which is an important distinction. So there are some people who are really gung-ho 100% about this based on the evidence that is more anecdotal. And I think I agree with it, but I think it's, I don't know, dangerous to be like, this is the solution to all of our problems with anecdotal evidence, you know?
Right, right.
But what everyone does agree on, there's real scientific evidence that grounding causes a reduction of inflammation, which is a pretty big deal, considering that it's like, I don't know, 90% of diseases are caused by inflammation.
So, right.
Something like that. I'm sure that's not the actual statistic, but that's a big deal. If you have a reduction in inflammation, there's generally going to be a reduction in pain. This also seems to have a blood thinning effect, and it leads to better sleep, and it causes a shift from the sympathetic to parasympathetic tone in the autonomic nervous system. So that's like, you know, talking about fight or flight. It turns, like, calms that down in your body.
Right.
And yeah, it's just, this is a very interesting concept. It's a very new science.
Technically, you practice this quite often, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I'd say, again, I really should have brushed up on these facts before I did this today, but, you know, life. So I can't remember all the things. I think that they recommend to get the benefits of this, it's about 30 minutes a day to really get the benefits from this. I would say I feel better 5 minutes of being barefoot outside, like in 5 minutes.
That's awesome.
I think probably if you really wanted to get real big results, if you're worried about inflammation, if you wanted to, again, I'm not a doctor. This is not supposed to replace medical help. Like, go consult real medical professionals. Just that disclaimer. But like, if you had a disease that had connection with inflammation and you wanted to use this as a supplementary treatment to maybe help whatever you're doing, you probably would want to do like the recommended 30 minutes a day. But I like grounding for just, I really think it, you get the benefits of mindfulness. And so I love this for as long as you can do it. If it's 2 minutes, right. If it's 5 minutes, if it's 2 hours, you know, why do you feel so good when you're at the beach?
Right. Gotta love the beach.
Connected to the earth all day. Like, there's a lot of reasons you're out in the sun getting vitamin D, but I think that there are some real physical things that happen in your body. I also really love this idea because I love how equitable it is. So there are really expensive ways that you can do grounding. You can get like earthing pads, I think, where you can like put them in your beds or in your house and plug them in. But that's not necessarily what I'm talking about. I think that this is something that is accessible for all people, even if you are like, I'm in a city right now. Oh, there are ways for us to do this. We are lucky enough to have a little patch of land in our backyard. It's not very big.
I love your backyard. It's very cute though.
It is a wonderful space. It has a lot of gravel like mixed in with our grass. So it's not like super comfy grass.
Right.
But it, you know, to just stick our feet in it, we like the pain a little bit. So
I'm not shocked.
No, I mean, I would, if we owned this place, we would spend a lot more time cultivating the lawn to be wider variety of plants and to make it really nice place to walk barefoot in. But we're able to do that. concrete will give you this. I don't think you could do it in a road. I think the tar would. I'm not positive on that. I think like a sidewalk, you can do earthing on a sidewalk. And you can get the benefits through that. Everywhere has a public park. Public parks are great places to do this, to take off your shoes and walk around in the grass, walk all around on the sidewalk. If you're a little bit more concerned about what's in the grass, it takes some practice.
I get a little, dog poop is my biggest fear in public grass spots. I try to go outside as much as possible, but I get driven nuts by the dog poop. I almost step in all the time.
Yeah. I hate that.
Really drives me nuts. I'm like, you're really ruining everybody. But that was exactly why New York City built the public park system that they have become renowned for, the private and the publics, because that was the whole concept, was they knew the health benefits, people going outside and just touching grass. I mean, it made such a big difference.
Yeah. So I love that this, and honestly, a lot of the poorer communities, like in urban areas, there are so many spaces. Ironically, there's more spaces in urban areas. Like it's almost more accessible for people in urban areas than definitely in like suburbia.
Right.
So yeah, there's spaces everywhere. You just have to be willing to find it, and it has to be on a priority, but I think it's an important priority to have.
Exactly.
So the last benefit that I want to talk about, there's a couple more benefits that I just want to mention really quickly, but the last one that I want to go into a little bit more depth, as being a nature teacher, having that as a specialty,
being our lovely Lucy,
we have to talk about nature. So
naturally,
this is the best way to connect children to the earth, to really teach them how to respect nature, is to really give them hands-on experience. One of the things I'll have you read this quote first, and then I'll go into this a little more.
In recent years, science has shed more light on the measurably impressive benefits of experience in the natural world to human health and cognition. Our understanding of this right emerges not only from what science can prove, but also from the spiritual necessity it cannot fully reveal. I emphasized that this birthright can only be realized if we accept responsibility for the preservation and care of the natural world. Most people will do that only if they come to love nature through natural experience, personal experience. It makes sense. You tend to care more for things that you have experience with.
Right. Yeah. Well, and this is Richard Louv. Richard Louv is kind of like a god in this community. he talks about nature deficit disorder, and he is Last Child in the Woods. That is his book. Awesome. I recommend read that book. Any human interacting with children.
Last Child in the Woods.
Such a good book. I love that last line. Most people will do that only if they come to love nature through personal experience, right?
Right.
We don't care about things that we don't have a connection to.
No. It's why the discussion of building empathy is so important, because a lot of people lack empathy for certain situations because they do not comprehend them.
Mm-hmm. So if we want to teach children to love the world, we want to teach them to be environmental stewards of our world. Take them outside, take their shoes off, have them literally, physically connect to Mother Nature through the bottoms of their feet.
Amazing.
Okay. These are honorable mentions.
Oh, the first one.
Yeah. Go back and listen to our episode on risk. We talk about risk assessment skills in that episode, I believe. If you're having children outside, yeah, it's going to heighten their risk assessment skills, their right. ability to actually see what's going on.
My B comment earlier, it's, you know, if you're watching out
exactly
for them,
exactly that.
It's not as much of a chance you're going to step on them.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
Immunity and airflow. So this is one that you kind of mentioned earlier. I think we kind of talked about this, but we think of this idea of wearing shoes to be more hygienic. If you want to have healthy feet, you need that air circulation. You don't want the germs and the, you don't want the sweat. Like, shoes are a perfect feeding ground for bacteria. They love it. It's dark, it's damp, it's hot. It's, you know, they're, if you want to solve a lot of that, the problems that come from that, you need to take shoes off. You need to get more airflow. And especially with children, this seems to come up a lot with children, that it's safer and healthier. Children have to get that physical feedback from the world. That's how they're learning. So if you put shoes on their feet, they're going to be even more likely to put things in their mouth and touch things with their hands, which are bare. We would prefer them to touch things with their feet. Right. Feet don't go into mouths quite. I mean, you do see that. I love videos where like kids use their feet as like scoops for yogurt and like a spoon or something. So I have to mention this one, going back to Reggio Roots.
Oh yeah.
Environment as the third teacher. Sensory, sensory, sensory. This is how you can include sensory in literally everything that your child does. If they are barefoot, it automatically becomes a sensory activity. especially if you are adding in real sensory elements, a lot of children will be more comfortable. Like, you know, I have a sensory kid, but he sometimes will be more interested in touching something with his feet. Especially I'd feel like as an art teacher, maybe that came up a lot for you, that children would be really engaged if it's an activity that they can like walk to do the activity instead of having to
exactly
sit and put their hands in it.
Creating that extra level, that extra effect of engagement. It definitely helps a lot.
This is also the point in my presentation that, because I am generally presenting to teachers, that I open it up. What are some additional benefits of being barefoot?
Let's see. The risk one is huge to me. Definitely, I could argue, because I feel like most things that you've mentioned, balance, risk assessment, building tougher soles. I know that is lending to the being barefoot, but having tougher feet, you're building calluses and whatnot.
Yeah, less likely to get hurt, you know.
Right.
One of the things that I generally mentioned that I forgot is, I guess going back to this connecting to the earth, there was a video that I saw one time, and I really tried to find the person whose video it was and get permission to include it in my presentation and share it with people. And I was never able to get into contact with this person, but it was a video of her children walking through kind of like a forested area, like barefoot. And it was really cool to see the different movement. Mm-hmm. Like they're going back to, there's just so much more variation in the movement, right? Not just a straight line through it. But the part of the video that I loved the most is they went up to the stump and it had like shelf mushrooms on it.
I love those. They're so cute.
Me too. But any child that is wearing rain boots who went over and saw shelf mushrooms on, what are they going to do?
Kick, they're going to stomp.
100%. And the interaction was so different with them being barefoot. They like spread their toes and were stroking these mushrooms with their toes.
That would have been so cute to include.
Yeah, which also goes back to a safety thing. Like,
right.
A very good example of like, mushrooms are not something you want children exploring with their hands if you do not know mushrooms, but totally acceptable to explore with their feet.
Right.
And it just, so I had talked about this in a presentation, and one of teachers are so smart. I just love teachers. I love teaching teachers and interacting with teachers. But she was talking, one of the people in this presentation was talking about the vulnerability that comes. That's important to have vulnerability.
Right.
To introduce that. Like, and children automatically have so much vulnerability anyways. But that is a good thing to grow up with and learn how to understand and to be comfortable with, to be comfortable with your vulnerabilities. And like, you know, Brené Brown, we all love Brené Brown. This idea of vulnerability is an important way to connect. Because they were vulnerable, they interacted with those mushrooms in a so much more respectful way.
And can I argue too that that is the basis too of, I guess, the key most important part about being barefoot? It's fun. It's enjoyable.
Yeah.
That's one of the greatest benefits, is like, it's that freedom, the freedom of the feet. Every kid wants to kick their shoes off. Every adult wants to kick their shoes off, honestly.
I love that. Yeah, that's an excellent one, actually. Freedom.
Freedom.
I don't know that anyone's mentioned that before. I don't know that we've discussed that before.
Wow, now I feel special.
It's that respect, trusting children, all that thing going back to risk. And speaking of risk, let's talk really quickly about ways to minimize the risk when you're introducing that. Again, my audience generally is teachers. We're talking about how to include this in daycares, but this really is just a real life thing. So going back to that risk assessment skills, the very first thing when we are having our children be barefoot in outdoor spaces is to survey the area. It helps, like, obviously, if you were a teacher going into an outdoor space and you're planning on children being barefoot, like, actually not even planning on children being barefoot, before you go into any space that you're going to bring a child, indoor, outdoor, whatever, you're supposed to, as a teacher, check the area for any problems before children ever enter that area. Like, that's a huge component of our jobs, is to keep children safe.
Right.
That's a huge component. I saw a TikTok video of like a dad talking about, he's like, it's so crazy that like the bare minimum of being a parent is keeping a child alive.
I knew you were going to say that. As teachers too, it's like, oh God, like your whole life is keeping them alive.
And that's so hard. And it's so hard to keep someone who alive, whose like prime purpose is to make themselves dead. Like everything they're doing is trying to kill themselves. So like, it's a tricky, tricky responsibility. So you want to obviously survey the area, but then you want to really involve the children in the process too. That helps build their risk assessment skills. So for example, with Leo, and again, this is one of the things that's funny. You have a child who is your opposite. But Leo would often prefer to keep his shoes on. He does not love the sensory. But there are some places we super encourage him to take off his shoes. It's so much safer to play on a playground and that playground equipment without your shoes. Because you have this plastic, anything plastic, so much safer to be without your shoes. We are not going to walk onto a playground and take off Leo's shoes immediately. We involve him in checking the surfaces, especially during the summer.
Right.
Often those plastic and metal materials are going to be super hot. They'll burn the bottoms of his little feet. So we're not going to let him play on it barefoot like that. And just have to tell him like, okay, you're going to have to be extra safe on this. You're going to have to go slower on these while you're climbing this, because you have shoes on and you're not as safe when you have shoes on.
How interesting that he's not as safe with his shoes on. I love that. But you know that about him.
Well, it just children in general. But yeah, definitely with him, with climbing, they're not able to grip as well.
Right.
So if you have a child climbing, they're way more likely to slip and get hurt. They're 100% going to be safer if they are barefoot. Then this one is important. We talk about this a lot when we're talking about messy play, talking about risky play. You have to let children progress at their own speed and comfort. It's easy to hear this list and be a gung. Well, I think.
Be like, let's go, no shoes.
Gung-ho, take off your shoes. Yeah, but we've talked about this, especially with messy play. If you force a child to do something like that they're not comfortable with, first off, you're not respecting them. And second of all, you're telling them not to listen to their body.
Right.
Their body is telling them that this thing is not safe or this thing is worrisome. You're telling them not to listen to it and do it anyways. And that's not what we want. That's the opposite of what we're trying to do. We're trying to let them listen to their bodies and be safe. If you are in a childcare setting, you have to do parent education.
Yeah.
That's the only way that you're going to make this work.
We've talked about this many times. The kids are at home more than they're at the school. So
yes. And if, especially like with someone like me, when I was working as a nature teacher, I had children for like 45 minutes once a week.
Mm.
That's not
nearly going
to make a difference.
Right.
Like that's not going to be a benefit. If you really want the children to get the benefits from this, to learn the risk assessment skills that go along with it, they need to be doing this at home. Okay. And the last one is written safety policies that helps your teachers feel more comfortable with this. It helps.
Yep. Incredibly important.
Like just important. If you're going to do this in your practice, you need to follow all the channels, make it a real thing that you do.
Exactly.
Okay. So that's why, let's go back to this idea of that it being a culture of the school. I scoured Virginia licensing to see if this is a part of licensing. It is not. Wearing shoes.
Interesting.
Is not a part of licensing. And if it, like Virginia licensing is pretty strict.
Yeah.
I'd say like Virginia as a state, we tend to be really rulesy.
Yes.
I would say that if it's not in Virginia licensing, it's not in licensing.
Right.
However, I've been in multiple schools, multiple places that is a rule and they think it's part of licensing.
Right. Nap time shoes must be worn because of fire drill safety.
Yes. Yeah. So like totally understand that. So you got to really understand what you're talking about. And that's why parent education is super important and teacher education is super important. Because in my opinion, like for a fire drill, I think that if you are really teaching, you're really preparing your children for an emergency, you'd prepare them for a situation which they might not be able to wear shoes. Like having children barefoot outside is a safety preparation.
Right.
Because you really maybe couldn't get their shoes on, or like something might happen that shoes, again, like right. During a nap, there really could be a real fire
right.
While there is a nap. You would not have time to put on all the children's shoes. I don't think the solution is that shoes should be on all the time. I think it should be, let's prepare children to be able to go outside without their shoes
right,
then.
Right.
And, you know, like I'm trying to think of like, I don't know, maybe a fire burned the soles of shoes or something like that, where like there's situations you got to prepare for emergencies. You don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
Something could happen. You go out and it's super rainy and their shoes all get stuck in the mud. I right. don't know. Well, I don't know. These are kind of far-fetched, but you know,
like, hygiene level too. Happen. Why on earth are we letting kids sleep in their cots with their muddy, dirty shoes? To take this to a hygiene mm-hmm. level, I just think it's really unhygienic to let kids sleep in their cots with their shoes. That's my other point on this. They're running around all day. They're stepping in the bathroom and then you're having them get on their cots, tuck her up. I get very weird about shoes and beds because I think it's also my cultural aspect as someone raised in an Asian household. It's just not normal. It's very yucky.
Yeah. So. No, I'd agree. And like, I'm not trying to make an attack.
On right. Right.
I think in general, you know, it's like going back to our episode where we did talk about risk, and talking about how, like, if somebody gets hurt using something, and, you know, parents will want to take something out. If you just take something out,
right.
you're missing an opportunity to educate. And I don't know. I think it's a good part of safety and preparation to have children practice being in all different types of situations and how to be safe
exactly
in a situation that might be out of your control.
Life is about being prepared for whatever can come at you. And that's what we do as educators, is we don't necessarily get them ready for everything, but we give them the tools to be able to best prepare to the best of their abilities. We're tool makers, we're tool builders, we're suppliers.
We're tools.
Tools. Yeah, you're a tool. I'm a tool.
How would you suggest a program implements this barefoot? What's a good way to start?
That's a great question. Always.
Thank you.
No pun intended, but definitely pun intended. Baby steps is always like always when you're starting something new, just a little bit at a time. It, like, honestly, very similar.
Dip your toes in.
To this list of, yeah, this very similar to you teaching a child how to do this is look for opportunities where you would be comfortable in this. Let everyone progress at their own speed and comfort. Find out what you are comfortable with. Maybe it is not wearing shoes during nap time. Maybe it's having barefoot days. Like that was one thing that we had discussed that we never got to when we were working together, Spencer and I, talking about a collaboration of being barefoot, having activities like where we could
run through paint. Squish
mud. That is something that we actually did too when we talked about that in the fort.
We'll definitely reshare those photos.
Shelters. Mm-hmm, yeah, that we had. We did give children an option if they like they couldn't step in the mud and mix this clay with their shoes on. They did it with their shoes off, obviously. So, and we didn't force children to get in. It was at their own comfort and speed, but have activities that are intentionally barefoot. Have yoga class where like you, there are times and places that you can start implementing in your program that it becomes more of a norm. And no matter what, you want to start at with the education portion of it. That's going to make everyone more comfortable. You have to get parents on board if you're going to do this with their children. Really do education. You can have a parent night, have it part of your welcome packet. Start at the, actually, let go back even further. Start at the source, teacher education first.
Right.
You want your teachers on board. Otherwise, you're fighting a losing battle. And if anyone hears this and they're at a program and they wanted to start implementing this, I give presentations.
It's awesome.
About this.
And she's very good, folks, in case you haven't heard.
Thank you. Thank you. I've given this a couple different organizations. I presented this at NAAEE, which is the North American Association for Environmental Education. I've given this at a Natural Start Alliance conference. So if you would like me to do this, come in and talk to your teachers. I'd be more than happy to do this for you. So, but yeah, start by educating teachers, move out to educating parents. Move out further and start implementing this a little bit at a time, plan certain activities, and yeah, go from there.
Love it. No, it makes sense. Baby steps, walk, don't run. One small step for man.
One giant step for baby kind.
Did it? I don't know how that theme sounds.
Yeah. Well, anyways, I think this is really important. I think it's a undercovered topic. I think we're luckily starting to realize this. You can find more. Maybe it's just in my sphere. And because I'm interested in this, I see more and more people talking about it. But this really can make a big difference. I really think it can, not in just the life of your child, but in your life as well. Let's get our shoes off and let's reconnect to this earth, this beautiful planet that we live on.
Shoes off for a good time. And hats off to you, Lucy, for an amazing subject. This is a really good topic. And it makes me excited to think about my health as an adult with my feet and how I'm going to treat my children in their fashionable shoes.
There's still a lot to wear. Put your little high heels in your dress up. And, but, you know,
I have seen some great videos of little girls and boys trying to wear their heels out and they trying to wear their heels out to like go shopping with mom and dad, and they're just slipping all over the place because those heels don't do anything.
Yeah, they're not real shoes. They are.
So I remember when I got my first pair of heels. I was 10. I was very excited.
Really?
Yeah, I begged for them. They were barely heels. So, all right. Well, don't forget to like, follow, and review.
Yeah, thank you so much for listening. Speckled bees. Buzziness.
Stomping on it.
Bees' feet are made for walking, and that's just what they'll do. One of these days, these feet are gonna walk right over you.
Don't step on bees.